This is Mark Steiner, and welcome back, everybody. We know that President Barack Obama is in Israel-Palestine, and we have two women with us on this, in the conversation today who are in Palestine, in Ramallah. Hekmat Bisesso is an activist, a Palestinian woman, an activist. Tamar Sharabi is sharing her house with her, living in Hekmat's house. She's an independent artist and activist spending time in Palestine. And the interesting thing about the two of them, I think in one way, personally, is that both women are Arab, one Jewish, Yemenite descent, one Palestinian. And that itself is an interesting thing that we don't think of as happening. And let me welcome both you, Hekmat and Tamar, to the Mark Steiner Show. It's a pleasure to have you both with us.
Thank you.
Tamar, let me just begin a little background with both of you. Start with you. How you ended up in Palestine from the United States, and why you went to Palestine in the first place.
I think that we all suffer from a media blockade in the United States, not really getting to hear what the situation is on the ground in many parts of the world for different reasons and different interests. And so for me, I grew up in a, I would say, traditional Jewish family, and never actually heard the word Palestine until I was in college, which is, I think, a really big problem with education and with my environment that I grew up in the United States. And so when I was exposed to the Palestinian struggle and heard a little bit about it through other activities, it took me a few years to finally confront my own identity and understand that the state of Israel was built, you know, on a settler colonial place. And, you know, that took a lot of time to come to. And so for me, finally, to be able to visit and to see what was happening on the ground here in Palestine was really an important journey.
And you also went to, when we first talked before you left, you were also going to study Arabic, right?
Yes, absolutely. I've been here mainly to study Arabic, but also to meet people and to hear stories and to share them when I come back home.
And Hekmat, tell our listeners a bit about who you are and what you do and how you met Tamar.
My name is Hekmat Bisesso. I am originally from Gaza, and I moved to West Bank since 8 years. I am working in the training field. I am a life skills trainer. I'm working with several organizations like Quaker, Medical, and some other organizations and with the universities. And I am activist. Some people name me women activist, but I don't like to just be women activist because I want to work for the society, especially women, but for the society. You know, I don't want to be women activist against men or other parts. So I believe in that. And I am married with 6 children. And,
That's a lot.
Yes, a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot.
If we go to details, it's a lot. Yes, that's true.
So let me jump into the political situation of the moment and then come back to something about the two of you. President Barack Obama is about to go to Palestine and Israel. And I'm curious about a couple of things. One is, what is the mood and feeling on the ground in Palestine, especially in Ramallah, about that visit? And your own analysis of what you think this means or does not mean for the future of both the Palestinian and the Israeli people. Hekmat?
Yes. For me, it doesn't make any sense because Obama will not visit the life of Palestine. He will visit the president, our president's office, Palestinian president's office, which is very clean, full of flowers, high security with air condition, and there is no checkpoint for the president's office, and there is no wall close to president's office, and there is no settlement close to the president's office. For sure, he will maybe will pass through that. He will see some buildings, but I don't know he will. Is there anybody will tell him this is the settlement and what is the meaning for settlement? I don't know if anyone will tell him this land you are passing through it. It's stolen from a Palestinian people. They are here. They own it. They have evidence and formal papers that they own it, and it's taken from for settlers, and settlers even make their life hell even when they have just a small piece close to their big land. So President Obama will visit the Palestinian president, and it will be for maybe some minutes, some hours, and I don't think our president will tell him about many problems, but there is a big difference when someone see and hear problems from the direct people whom are suffering, and someone just tell him the story. So he will not meet the people whom we have thousands of people, their children, their part of their families in the Israeli jail. We have thousands of people, their lands taken. We have thousands of people split through the wall. The wall divided them and go through their lands and their homes sometimes. And we have many people even holding American citizens and have lots of problems here because the Israeli side did not allow them to have ID. So they cannot enjoy holding American passport, and they have a bad life, a bad movement, because they don't have the ID.
And Tamara, your perspective, and one of the things I know that President Obama is taking a helicopter to the West Bank, flying over the wall, flying over checkpoints.
Yes.
So he will miss all that. But I'm curious your take on that, and given, especially as an American.
Well, everything that Hikmet says is completely, you know, the reality, and it's so much worse on the ground. And of course, Obama flying in a helicopter, I understand, for his own security, but it's really also to prevent him from seeing what is the real situation. You are unable to move from one point to another without understanding the security, police state, military state that all Palestinians live under occupation. And so where he's going to visit, if you were a Palestinian moving from one point to another, you would see very clearly just down the road the Israeli Beit El office, which is basically for all the West Bank settlers to have paperwork done, and also for Palestinians to have certain kinds of paperwork or ID work done. And so, I mean, he's getting completely not what the reality is, not really what the picture is. I've had to go through some checkpoints at various times and for different reasons. And, of course, I still get completely a different, better treatment as an American. I still have to stand sometimes on the same lines, but it's completely different. And what I experienced here over these past couple of months is absolutely nothing compared to what Palestinians here live every single day. So even if I'm here as a visitor, I can never experience the oppression that they actually experience every moment.
Tamara, I'm really curious. I do, and it is good to please jump into the conversation anytime you hear something. I'd like to hear what you both think and how you kind of interact together, living together in Ramallah. But I'm curious. You know, when you went there, you were raised in this Yemenite Jewish family in America. You came to Palestine to learn Arabic. You've been involved here as an artist and activist in many struggles, Honduras, the United States, and more. And I wonder what kind of shocked you, that kind of stopped you in your tracks, that you did not expect when you got to Palestine.
I think for me, what I did not expect was to realize how fragmented the Israelis have created this complete system in the West Bank that I'm sure many people are still unfamiliar with, even though it's been under this type of an agreement since Oslo. I mean, the West Bank is divided into Area A, B, and C. And Area A is under full Palestinian control, and it's only about less than 20% of the West Bank. And Area B is under Palestinian civil control and joint Israeli-Palestinian security control, which basically means Israeli control. And then Area C is under full Israeli control. So a Palestinian police car cannot even go through that area, actually. And Area C is 61% of the West Bank. So for me, it was very surprising to understand. And how does that all interact? So you have a place like Hebron, okay, or Hebron or Khalil here, where you have many settlements in the city. They've completely shut down the main street, the main artery of the old city, where you have hundreds of shops that have been closed down. And, of course, this is Area C. And you have many Palestinians, obviously, that are still trying to live there, that are being steadfast and not leaving their homes. And they live underneath the Israeli settlers that are there, that are sometimes throwing trash on them, that are, you know, and I mean, people can't imagine what that looks like, but if you take a walk down the street, you understand that they've had to build a fence on top of their street so that the settlers that live above don't throw trash and it doesn't hit people. So some of this stuff, it's so ugly and it's so unimaginable to most, I would say most people, especially most Americans, because we never see this stuff in the media and we never really talk about it. You know, sometimes there's a clip that comes out and then afterwards the Israeli army has to apologize and say, oh, well, this was just one soldier. But there are many groups that are also working within Israel that are exposing all of these things. One of them that comes to mind is Breaking the Silence, which is Israeli soldiers giving testimony about some of what their experiences are like. And they say that these experiences are not unique. You know, what we're sharing, it's pretty much very common to most experiences of most people in the army. And so, you know, it's not really any surprise in one hand, but at the other hand, of course, I mean, I was not prepared to see most of what I have seen. I'm still not prepared to see it, but I have to. I came here to listen and to observe and to share afterwards, you know? I mean, in my own way, to break the silence that exists in the United States. And of course, because the State of Israel has completely hijacked the discourse and tries to speak on behalf of all Jewish people, there needs to be other people that are speaking out and saying, no, actually, we don't agree. This is not in our name. We're embarrassed that you're saying that what you're doing is for the security of the Jewish people, because actually I believe that the way that the State of Israel is behaving and has behaved from the beginning of when it came, when they established a state, has always been putting the Jews in more jeopardy and in less security.
The two of you together, I'm curious if you've had conversations together about who you are and who you are to each other. I mean that both in a social sense, but also in a political sense. I mean that as I said at the very top of our conversation, I said you both are Arab women. You may have grown up in the United States and be Jewish and Yemenite, but your descent is Arab, Tamara. And Hekmat, as a Palestinian woman and as a Muslim woman who grew up in Gaza, you too are an Arab. And you're in this space together watching this stuff go on. And I wonder if you two have ever had that conversation about that together.
I want to say that first I identify as a human being.
Right.
Before I give myself a nationality or explain myself from a certain region. I mean, identity is very important. And most people, it's very difficult for them to confront their identity. But when I'm here, I think as a human being, when you see what's happening and you understand the way that some human beings are behaving to other human beings, and you realize, how can this be happening? And you don't want to make them less human than you. So you want to understand why it's happening. But it's so difficult to swallow. And then when you understand that you're in some way might be complicit unless you speak up about it, then you understand what your responsibility is. And so, yes, of course. I mean, for me, the best way that I can respect the culture is first learning the language and respecting the culture through listening to firsthand narratives and stories. Because, you know, how many times do we see a program in the United States about Holocaust survivors? And we never hear about Palestinian refugees. And that's at the core of this issue, is what is the big fight about in Israel and Palestine? How many refugees were created when the state of Israel became, and before and after? And it's ongoing ethnic cleansing. It didn't stop in 1948, and it didn't stop in 1967. And so for me, when I look at Hekmat and when I look at all of the other powerful women that are here and working very hard every day just in what they do, beyond their activist activities, just in being a mother here, how challenging it is to be worried that maybe your daughter or your son might be arrested or get caught in a checkpoint, all of these things that are completely unimaginable, I think, to most parents in the United States in this capacity. Because, of course, in New York City, if you're a person of color, you're also worried that your son or your daughter is going to get picked up by the police. So, of course, there's things that are very similar, but it's different in another sense of the word. And for me, like I said, I mean, I came here to listen and to observe and to share afterwards. And it's been very challenging for me in many different ways, but at the same time, it's been a very big privilege to be welcomed here, specifically with Hekmat, but of course in this land.
That was a very powerful statement. I appreciate you being that open with us, Tamara. Hekmat, do you want to add to that?
Yani, I want to say something about my life, which is, yani, things happened in my life helped me to be more human, more than being just Palestinian. Yani, to be over my nationality and over my religion. I'm a human first, Arab second, Palestinian, Muslim, all of this part of identity. But the biggest identity is I am a human. What happens that during the first Intifada, me and my husband, which is the first husband, we used to face some financial troubles. Then I start to think what to do, and there was extra flat in our home, so I made it a hostel for foreigners. And at the last year, 3 years of the Intifada, and the first 2 years of Oslo Agreement, 5 years, I was owning a hostel in Gaza, a cheap hostel, and it's just for foreigners, photographers, journalists, volunteers, researchers, students from all over the world. All the time I have some people from somewhere And at the end of the day, we sit together, we have some speech, some talking. They talk about our community, and I hear about their opinion about our community, and I hear about their community, their life, their countries. And this helps me to have friends. I cannot travel. I'm stuck in Gaza. But I have many people bring many ideas and many thoughts, and I start to have international friends, international family. I name it now international family because I have a very special relationship with many of them. And through this, I was like a person who are traveling. I know, about Japan from Japanese and about United States from American people, about France from French people. So this helps me to have a little bit open mind and be able to handle with all of this differences of culture, religious, and to be clear and to be more related to the human, mostly. So when I came here to West Bank, it's easy for me to host any foreigner, whatever the religious, whatever the nationality, whom came to know and to understand and to learn about our community, because it's very difficult and very complicated and very hard for our voice to reach abroad. Very, very limited people won't be able to travel, and many of them have trouble if they talk or do making speeches or being free. Young Palestinians are not free in their country and are not free outside. Yeah, they're always risk of talking, telling the truth and talking about political. So it's great that some people have the ability to come and be between us and live with us and see by their eyes and hear by their ears and feel by their heart what is going on and what is the real life for us. So it's a big rule. I admire and respect all the people who pay money and came here and pay attention and pay from their energy and from their life and their time and come and stay with us and monitor and see everything in its reality, and for sure, these people will talk, will write a book, will be active, will know, at least during inside their groups, their friends, their families, they will talk about what they see, what they hear, what they think, and so it's a very very big part, very big. Source for our advocacy and our work and our rule in the country, and we are all as a Palestinian living under closure. There is many people are not allowed to travel, and many people have in a blacklist, and many people don't have ID, and many people rejected to have a visa, denied, and it's very good when the foreigners came, and I from this radio, I respect and admire and send lots of love and peace for all the people who think of us and fight for us and demonstrate for us and do any small thing for us as a Palestinian, because this is the real humanity, that you feel upset and you do something for any human in the world in a trouble, in a problem. And to have Tamar in our house, it's something sensitive, but everything in the life has a challenge and everything has a side, some points in another side, nothing totally positive, but at the same hand, it's a good source for her to see the daily life for a Palestinian family and what they say and what's going on, and have a chance to discuss something and to be in a I wish if the President Obama will be able to come to my house and have a cup of coffee, and I have the chance to tell him some of my stories and the women I know whom I know, some stories of the women I know and how they affect. And I can let him see some pictures and hear some stories. And so he will be in more, he will know more than coming with a helicopter and come from a very safe line and be in a president's office and then leave to I don't where and blah, 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 all of that.
You know, there was a New York Times, I don't know if you, either one of you had a chance to see it, but the New York Times Magazine, they had a piece about Boudros and the nonviolent movement. Did you see that?
Nabi Saleh.
Yeah.
There is Balayin, there is Na'lin, there is Nabi Saleh, there is Boudros, there is Zawiya, there is Al-Walaja. There is many villages, there is weekly actions, weekly nonviolent actions, weekly resistance, and there is a new initiative now in the Palestinian area. There is a group of activists start to go to Area C, to land stolen and taken from Palestinian, and just start to make like the idea of settlement, like how they put their hands in a land and start to take it as a settlement. The Palestinians, but the Palestinian cannot build in any land. So some activists start to put tents in these areas. And in every initiative now we have until now, there is six or five initiatives. And just from the first hours, the Israeli soldiers came and surround the area and kick out the activists and take some of them to the prison and big trouble. But this is the resistance. Yani, we put ourselves in a troubles, and we need to face the troubles, to be ready to face the troubles, to reach some victory.
Because Tamar, what Ekman was just describing and what we've been seeing is something that, again, we don't see. We don't hear about the nonviolent resistance. We don't hear about what's really happening the way you two have described it. And that, because when we were here in the States, we look at the Palestinians as everything is violent. Everything is blowing up buses. Everything is throwing rocks. Mm. But we're not hearing the whole story.
I want to say something here. I am, maybe it's something philosophy, but before this generation, before many years, before, like, let us say, before 15 years from now, I can hear this sentence. I accept this sentence that we don't know. But now, I cannot handle with this sentence, to be honest, because the internet and the technology resource is amazing. One, you can write two words in Google, and you can know a lot. You can write any person all over the world can write resistance in Palestine, nonviolent resistance in Palestine. There is millions of articles, many initiatives, and many things, and many interviews, many meetings, many things. But I think the human all over the world lose the energy of responsible and lose the energy of putting themselves in a challenge. Most of the people all over the world are tired from the life and the heavy responsible in the life. And most of the people are busy with their work, with their economy, with their job, the children. And each one closes his door at the end of the day and thinking that he's in peace, which is not true, because no one will be in peace while there is conflict against any human in any place in the world. And the full meaning of a human is resist and stand with any human in need, stand with any human in risk. And any American or European or whatever, or Japanese or Chinese person want to know about Palestine, Google, help a lot. Facebook, amazing. So it's, yani, now the media, since many years the media was controlling the people and write and publish what they want to make the people know, and they hide what they don't want the people to know. But now it's over. It's out of control. There is still control system for Facebook, for Google, but it's very limited related to how you can reach. So it's part of being away from human responsible. And because the Middle East is far away of Europe and United States, the people feel of this big way, so they are, everything is very far from their secure and from their homeland. But at the end, it's human. And when a woman like me in Palestine has a friend relationship and a strong relation with a woman living in New York, and I deal with her like she's my mom, and she deal with me like I am her daughter, this is a big thing. This is a very real meaning for humanity. Whatever her religious, whatever my religious, whatever her nationality, whatever my nationality, at the end, both of us are happy to sit in one table and have a meal and enjoying the morning cafe together and feel so happy to be visited each other. So this is the real meaning for a human and the real meaning for happiness in the life, to be honest.
Well, Tamara, did you want to add anything before we close?
I guess what I can say is that, you know, sometimes we look at something like Obama's visit as big news, but I just spent a few days with the Freedom Bus, which is an initiative of the Janine Freedom Theater, which does playback theater, which basically means that a community member or somebody tells a story, and then there's a team of actors that play back the story with music and through theater. And it's an amazing way of doing cultural resistance in another way. And we just happen to have this trip right now that's in the Jordan Valley. And last night we were in a place called Samara. And after the performance, I went up to one of the gentlemen who shared a story with us, a very difficult story about how his father passed away basically in his arms as he was trying to cross a checkpoint years ago. And I thanked him for sharing his story, and then I asked him, you know, what do you think about Obama's visit? And I said, you know, I don't share the politics of my country. And he said, you know, you should be proud. Everyone should be proud of where they come from. But, of course, the politics is different. And, you know, people there that are living under this full Israeli control, and I should add that as the play was going on, you hear, you know, Israeli shooting military training just down the road. And that's something that the people that live there hear all the time. So, you know, for us it was something different, but for them that's their everyday life. And, you know, Obama's visit, it's not going to change the fact that tomorrow or the day after a child might be arrested as they're coming home from school. Somebody's going to be detained for no reason, and they're going to go to jail, and they're not going to have any charges for many months, but they're going to sit there, and it's all part of this campaign of control. And I just want to say that it's really important for people in the United States to realize where their tax dollars go to, how much military aid is being sent to Israel, and what the repercussions of that is for Israelis, for Jewish people, and for Americans. Of course, you know, we can never, it's not an equal conversation. You know, sometimes people want to have a conversation with an Israeli or a Jewish person and a Palestinian. And, you know, it's like to go in someone's house and to rob them and then to say, let's have a negotiation while the robber is still in the house. I think that that's a really powerful way to look at the situation. And I think that we have to listen to what the Palestinians are saying and look to them. people that think that Obama's visit is going to change something. Unfortunately, we need to look more at history and realize how it's always small groups of people that are making change on the ground.
Tamar Sharabi, Hekmat Beseso, thank you so much for taking your time, a lot of our listeners here in the United States, and be safe, and thank you both so very much for everything you do.